Chapter 29. Mrs. Verloc, wavering between alarm and wonder, stared at him. He sought for information. Why have the address sewn like this inside the coat? And he heard that the mangled remains he had inspected that morning with extreme repugnance were those of a youth, nervous, absent-minded, peculiar, and also that the woman who was speaking to him had had the charge of that boy since he was a baby. Easily excitable, he suggested. Oh yes, he is. But how did he come to lose his coat, Chief Inspector? He suddenly pulled out a pink newspaper he had bought less than half an hour ago. He was interested in horses. Forced by his calling into an attitude of doubt and suspicion towards his fellow citizens, Chief Inspector Heat relieved the instinct of credulity implanted in the human breast by putting unbounded faith in the sporting profits of that particular evening publication. Dropping the extra special onto the counter, he plunged his hand again into his pocket, and pulling out the piece of cloth faded presented him with out of a heap of things that seemed to have been collected in shambles and rag shops. He offered it to Mrs. Verloc for inspection. I suppose you recognize this? She took it mechanically in both her hands. Her eyes seemed to grow bigger as she looked. Yes, she whispered, then raised her head, and staggered backward a little. Whatever for is it torn out like this? The chief inspector snatched across the counter the cloth out of her hands, and she sat heavily on the chair. He thought, identification's perfect. And in that moment he had a glimpse into the whole amazing truth. Verloc was the third man. Mrs. Verloc, he said, it strikes me that you know more of this bomb affair than even you yourself are aware of. Mrs. Verloc sat still, amazed, lost in boundless astonishment. What was the connection? And she became so rigid all over that she was not able to turn her head at the clatter of the bell, which caused the private investigator Heat to spin round on his heel. Mr. Verloc had shut the door, and for a moment the two men looked at each other. Mr. Verloc, without looking at his wife, walked up to the chief inspector, who was relieved to see him return alone. You here? Muttered Mr. Verloc heavily. Who are you after? No one, said Chief Inspector Heat in a low tone. Look here, I would like a word or two with you. Mr. Verloc, still pale, had brought an air of resolution with him. Still he didn't look at his wife. He said, come in here, then. And he led the way into the parlor. The door was hardly shut when Mrs. Verloc, jumping up from the chair, ran to it, as if to fling it open, but instead of doing so fell on her knees, with her ear to the keyhole. The two men must have stopped directly they were through, because she heard plainly the chief inspector's voice, though she could not see his finger pressed against her husband's breast emphatically. You are the other man, Verloc. Two men were seen entering the park. And the voice of Mr. Verloc said, well, take me now. What's to prevent you? You have the right. Oh no. I know too well who you have been giving yourself away to. He'll have to manage this little affair all by himself. But don't you make a mistake, it's I who found you out. Then she heard only muttering. Inspector Heat must have been showing to Mr. Verloc the piece of Stevie's overcoat, because Stevie's sister, guardian, and protector heard her husband a little louder. I never noticed that as he had hit upon that dodge. Again for a time Mrs. Verloc heard nothing but murmurs, whose mysteriousness was less nightmarish to her brain than the horrible suggestions of shaped words. Then Chief Inspector Heat, on the other side of the door, raised his voice. You must have been mad. And Mr. Verloc's voice answered, with a sort of gloomy fury. I have been mad for a month or more, but I am not mad now. It's all over. It shall all come out of my head, and hang the consequences. There was a silence, and then Private Citizen Heat murmured. What's coming out? Everything, exclaimed the voice of Mr. Verloc, and then sank very low. After a while it rose again. You have known me for several years now, and you found me useful too. You know I was a straight man. Yes, straight. This appeal to old acquaintance must have been extremely distasteful to the chief inspector. His voice took on a warning note. Don't you trust so much to what you have been promised? If I were you, I would clear out. I don't think we will run after you. Mr. Verloc was heard to laugh a little. Oh yes, you hope the others will get rid of me for you, don't you? No, no, you don't shake me off now. I have been a straight man to those people too long, and now everything must come out. Let it come out, then, the indifferent voice of Chief Inspector Heat assented. Tell me now, how did you get away? I was making for Chesterfield Walk, Mrs. Verloc heard her husband's voice, when I heard the bang. I started running then. Fog. I saw no one till I was past the end of George Street. Don't think I met anyone till then. So easy as that, marveled the voice of Chief Inspector Heat. The bang startled you, eh? Yes, it came too soon, confessed the gloomy, husky voice of Mr. Verloc. Mrs. Verloc pressed her ear to the keyhole. Her lips were blue, her hands cold as ice, and her pale face, in which the two eyes seemed like two black holes, felt to her as if it were enveloped in flames. On the other side of the door the voices sank very low. She caught words now and then, sometimes in her husband's voice, sometimes in the smooth tones of the chief inspector. She heard this last say, "We believe he stumbled against the root of a tree?" There was a husky, voluble murmur, which lasted for some time, and then the chief inspector, as if answering some inquiry, spoke emphatically. Of course. Blown to small bits. Limbs, gravel, clothing, bones, splinters all mixed up together. I tell you they had to fetch a shovel to gather him up with. Mrs. Verloc sprang up suddenly from her crouching position, and stopping her ears, reeled to and fro between the counter and the shelves on the wall towards the chair. Her crazed eyes noted the sporting sheet left by the chief inspector, and as she knocked herself against the counter she snatched it up, fell into the chair, tore the optimistic, rosy sheet right across in trying to open it, then flung it on the floor. On the other side of the door, Chief Inspector Heat was saying to Mr. Verloc, the secret agent, "So your defense will be practically a full confession?" "It will. I am going to tell the whole story. You won't be believed as much as you fancy you will." And the Chief Inspector remained thoughtful. The turn this affair was taking meant the disclosure of many things, the laying waste of fields of knowledge, which, cultivated by a capable man, had a distinct value for the individual and for the society. It was sorry, sorry meddling. It would leave Michaelis unscathed. It would drag to light the professor's home industry, disorganize the whole system of supervision, make no end of a row in the papers, which, from that point of view, appeared to him by a sudden illumination as invariably written by fools for the reading of imbeciles. Mentally he agreed with the words Mr. Verloc let fall at last in answer to his last remark. Perhaps not. But it will upset many things. I have been a straight man, and I shall keep straight in this, if they let you, said the chief inspector cynically. Who will be preached to, no doubt, before they put you into the dock. And in the end you may yet get let in for a sentence that will surprise you. I wouldn't trust too much the gentleman who's been talking to you. Mr. Verloc listened, frowning. My advice to you is to clear out while you may. I have no instructions. There are some of them, continued Chief Inspector Heat, laying a peculiar stress on the word "him," who think you are already out of the world. Indeed, Mr. Verloc was moved to say, though since his return from Greenwich he had spent most of his time sitting in the tap room of an obscure little public house, he could hardly have hoped for such favorable news. That's the impression about you. The chief inspector nodded at him. Anish. Clear out. Where to? Snarled Mr. Verloc. He raised his head, and gazing at the closed door of the parlor, muttered feelingly, "Colin, I only wish you would take me away tonight. I would go quietly." I dare say, assented sardonically the chief inspector, following the direction of his glance. The brow of Mr. Verloc broke into slight moisture. He lowered his husky voice confidentially before the unmoved chief inspector. The lad was half-witted, irresponsible. Any court would have seen that at once. Only fit for the asylum. And that was the worst that would have happened to him if the chief inspector, his hand on the door handle, whispered into Mr. Verloc's face. He may have been half-witted, but you must have been crazy. What drove you off your head like this? Mr. Verloc, thinking of Mr. Vladimir, did not hesitate in the choice of words. A Hyperborean swine, he hissed forcibly. What you might call a gentleman. The chief inspector, steady-eyed, nodded briefly his comprehension, and opened the door. Mrs. Verloc, behind the counter, might have heard, but did not see his departure, pursued by the aggressive clatter of the bell. She sat at her post of duty behind the counter. She sat rigidly erect in the chair with two dirty pink pieces of paper lying spread out at her feet. The palms of her hands were pressed convulsively to her face, with the tips of the fingers contracted against the forehead, as though the skin had been a mask which she was ready to tear off violently. The perfect immobility of her pose expressed the agitation of rage and despair, all the potential violence of tragic passions, better than any shallow display of shrieks, with the beating of a distracted head against the walls, could have done. Chief Inspector Heat, crossing the shop at his busy, swinging pace, gave her only a cursory glance. And when the cracked bell ceased to tremble on its curved ribbon of steel, nothing stirred near Mrs. Verloc, as if her attitude had the locking power of a spell. Even the butterfly-shaped gas flames posed on the ends of the suspended T-bracket burned without a quiver. And that shop of shady wares fitted with steel shelves painted a dull brown, which seemed to devour the sheen of the light. The gold circlet of the wedding ring on Mrs. Verloc's left hand glittered exceedingly with the untarnished glory of a piece from some splendid treasure of jewels, dropped in a dustbin. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.